So it's not all doom and gloom for aspiring writers out there. In 2011, Hugh Howey was a relatively unknown writer with a day job in a bookstore. Then he released a dystopian science fiction novella on the internet, all by himself, no publisher. Readers loved it. They wanted more. Before any print copies had even been published, Hugh Howey's Wool series sold hundreds of thousands of copies and earned him a small fortune. These days, Hugh Howey is something of a hero to would-be writers and the face of self-publishing. And from the beginning, he's insisted that he is not just a one-off, that self-publishing is the future for lots of writers.
I certainly think that self-publishing is the natural entree to a publishing career. I look to the music industry for inspiration on where publishing is heading. And musicians start off by playing cover albums, which we would call, in literature, we would call that fan art. We would kind of denigrate it. But for musicians, that's how you learn. You play other people's work, and then you branch out and play your own work, and you start on the streets and, you know, self-producing and really hustling and trying to get as many little gigs as you can before you work your way up. And I think that's a natural way to increase your talents and grow your audience and your repertoire. And I think that's what we see now with a lot of writing careers.
Well, the thing that changed with you and with the publicity around what you achieved is writers have always had to struggle, and writers are very familiar with living in garrets and eking out a living. You made a phenomenal amount of money self-publishing. I mean, the Wall Street Journal reported that you turned down a seven-figure deal from one of the big major publishers because you figured you could make more on your own.
Yeah, and that's, you know, of course that's an outlier situation, but I have quite a few friends who have had similar situations where they've turned down really lucrative deals. I have a friend who's turned down eight figures for her works, and she's doing better on her own. But I think it's dangerous to hold up the extreme outliers. It's also dangerous to think you wrote the next Harry Potter. What I think is really inspiring are the number of people that I've met who are having success with their self-publishing career, and they're not having to become extreme outliers, and they're making a livable wage, and they have...
Livable, you mean there are a lot of people who are managing to quit their day jobs?
Yeah, they're...
And write for a living through self-publishing?
Absolutely. There are thousands of authors today making
thousands.
A living. Thousands. My guess would be somewhere between 2,000 and 4,000, making enough that they don't have to go get the other job. And I know hundreds who are making five and six figures a month. And the tricky thing with any entertainment career is that you don't know how long it's going to last. So you don't know if this is sustainable for each of these artists. But a lot of self-published authors are making a lot more money than they can make if they were submitting to traditional publishers, where they would maybe get a $5,000 or $15,000 advance and never earn out.
How does this work? You know, let's say I've, in my spare time and on weekends, managed to write a novel, and I think to hell with sending it around to one of the major publishers so it can be turned down. I'm just going to self-publish. Where does it go? How does it show up in everybody's Kindles?
Well, you submit it to the retail establishments where you want the file to be hosted. So Barnes & Noble, Apple, Amazon, you have the final edited manuscript, you have your cover art, you have the information about the book, and you just go to each of these retailers and you upload the information and press a button. And it doesn't cost you a thing at any of these places. I mean, you've probably paid for cover art, and you've paid for editing and those sorts of things. But on the other side, if you go with a major publisher, they're going to take 85% of the revenue and leave you with 15%.
Well, the other thing, the advantage of going the traditional route, on the other hand, is all the author has to do is write the book. And at that point, the publishers take over. They do publicity. They do marketing. You know, they pull blurbs for you, and your book shows up on one of those nice tables at the front of Barnes & Noble. If you just hit send and publish on an e-platform, your book's just going in there with all those thousands of others. How does anybody find it?
I wish it worked like you said it does. I've worked with major publishers. I've worked with over 30 publishers around the world, but it just doesn't work like that anymore, where authors write a book. And I don't know that it ever did. I mean, some of the most famous authors, people like Mark Twain, were constant self-promoters. And when you do a deal with a major publisher, one of the first things they're going to ask you is, like, what's your platform? How many Twitter followers do you have? and the marketing and promotion a lot falls onto you. So we're going to send you on book tour, and it's brutal if you even get that. Most authors don't get that, and they don't get a lot of marketing.
Yeah, very few of those these days. So how do people manage to get their books seen when they're e-published, or especially when you're self-published? Because there must be a feeling for readers that there's no quality control.
Yeah, well, I think readers feel like that even when they, you know, I was a bookseller for years while I was trying to make it as a writer, and they feel that when they walk into a bookstore. I mean, the 9 out of 10 books that readers pick up without a heavy recommendation or seeing it on a bestseller list, they're disappointed with.
This is sort of depressing, don't you think? I mean, for people who go into writing because they simply love literature, they want to produce wonderful novels and add to the world's storytelling stream, and then you discover, well, that's not enough. Now you've got to be really good at self-hyping and, you know, and something of a business person.
It depends on what you want. I think we're in the most exciting and liberating time for writers in human history. If you go into it the way I did, just as a love of writing, there's no one to tell you no. You write the exact kind of story you want. You put the kind of cover art that you believe in. You work with the editor that you choose. It's so liberating. And you put out really edgy, exciting, genre-bending stories. You know, publishers just aren't taking risks. They'll say, like, we love this book, we just don't know how to sell it, so we need to change it, and you need to make it more like something that has sold well recently. It's a very Hollywood mentality.
So are you saying, from not just from a writer's perspective, but from a reader's perspective, e-publishing and self-publishing is producing, what, more or better literature?
Yeah, because it's a wider diversity of literature. The people who are really killing it in self-publishing are primarily female writers. You've got minority voices, and you've got really niche genres and readers and tastes that are being catered to for the first time. The flowering of creativity and the explosion of voices is far greater than any concerns about curation. When I hear curation, the word I hear is censorship, because the idea that we should have someone in charge of only allowing certain voices to be heard sounds a lot like China's attitude towards the internet. We shouldn't worry about there being too many books. We should worry about there being too few people who are interested in reading.
To get back to the money, when you first self-published Wool, your big breakout book, and nobody had ever heard of it, and, I don't know, maybe your friends and family were buying it, what happened next? How did it take off?
Well, I think it helped that I had 7 or so novels published before then. So I had sold a few thousand copies of books in the 2 years before Wool came out. 1,000 true fans can really sustain a career. So I had that kind of prime just by writing and publishing consistently. And then there was something about the story that when people read the first part of Wool, which I've now made free, they told everyone that they knew who read, and people they knew that didn't even like to read, like, you got to read this story. It's short. You'll love it. Trust me. And I've talked to a lot of readers because I'm curious about how it all happened. I've met people who have bought dozens of copies of the ebook and sent it to friends, emailed it to friends so that they could get hooked. And how to create that, it's impossible to know. I might never write anything again for the rest of my career that generates that kind of word of mouth. So, you know, there's a lot of luck involved. But
you must have been stunned when it began happening. And I'm just wondering what it was like. You know, you must have been sitting at home, and day by day you'd watch the numbers kind of tick up.
Yeah, you could see it happening, and it was kind of a gradual slope until it went bonkers. It was in October of 2011 that it really took off. In that month, I sold 1,000 copies, and the next month it was 3,000, and the next month it was 10,000.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
Well, I was sitting in the bookstore where I worked as an assistant manager, and I would look at my boss, who we both wanted to be writers and had this dream, and I'm like refreshing the page and looking at the book on the bestseller list. And I'm looking at him like, man, this is insane. And he's just waiting for me to put my 2 week notice in, you know?
Eventually, we're
not allowed to have cell phones on the floor. And I'm like having to take phone calls from a film agent because we're doing a film deal with Ridley Scott. And I'm like, it was just unsustainable. And I was also, you know, making more in a day from my writing than I was making in a week at the bookstore. So it just didn't make sense for me to be there.
So that's, you know, that is literary stardom, and it's wonderful and exciting. But you raised the question earlier. I mean, the big risk is it going to last? I mean, recently there's been a fair amount of talk about how maybe everybody's Kindles are full and the ebook market is just going to start tanking.
Yeah, that'll never happen. The market in general will be fine for each individual career. of course, hangs in the balance. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, like, it's just nice if a writer can just sit and write. But in order to have a career, you need to write at least one novel a year. If you land a big publishing deal, they're going to expect that. Sustaining that output is necessary. If you want to have a 40-year career as a writer, you need to write 40 novels probably in your life. You can't bank on that writing that one great novel that sells millions of copies and then retire on that.
Well, that's really interesting what you just said, because that's attention, right? That we bring to books and the literary world. Is writing a career or is it a calling? Is your goal to make a living and be a writer as a job? Or are you an artist hoping that you just write that one really great deathless novel?
Yeah, and there's no wrong answer there. Either motivation is a great reason to get into writing. In either case, you really should enjoy your day job and you should live well below your means. While I was trying to make it as a writer, my wife and I lived in a 750 square foot house and had, you know, very little expenses and lived a very simple lifestyle. And that's something that artists need to be prepared to do if they want to try to break in, again, as someone who just wants to express themselves or someone who wants to try to develop enough of an audience to earn a living.
Hugh Howey is the best-selling author of Wool and several sequels, all of which he has self-published.